for joining us. And we'll go ahead and have a roll call, please.
Alpha Yankee Vandaclea Indian. Here. City of Light.
Here.
City of Kajito City.
Here.
City of Coachella.
Here.
Coachella Valley Water District. City of Desert Hot Springs. Imperial Irrigation District. City of Indian Wells.
Present.
City of Indio.
Present.
City of La Quinta.
Present.
Mission Springs Water District.
Present.
City of Palm Desert.
Here.
City of Palm Springs.
Here.
City of Grand Mirage.
Here.
Rosedale County. Torres Martinez, the Dakota Indian. Chair, we have a quorum.
Thank you. We'll go ahead and move on to item number 3, public comments on agenda items. Anyone wishing to address the Energy Environment, Environmental Resources Committee on items appearing on this agenda may do so at this time. Please limit comments to 3 minutes. And do you have any comments?
No, Chair, we do not.
Any comments? All right, thank you. We'll go ahead and move on to committee member and director comments. Do we have any comments from our committee? I do have one report from our last SCAG meeting on the Energy Environment Committee for the Southern California Association of Governments. We discussed our Water Action Resolution implementation update. They were showing us that for the state over the last 4 decades, production has been going up, manufacturing population has been going up, but water use is staying pretty constant. And they attributed that to water efficient devices and irrigation, climate appropriate landscaping, and denser environments. But we do know, you know, even though we are saying constant, Lake Mead and Lake Powell are drying up, and aquifers throughout the state are being watered rapidly. So they did do a study on 2 different scenarios, which would be moderate efficiency if all of our state was compliant with current standards, and then high efficiency if all the state had the latest technology in water conservation. What they showed that California's water efficiency potential is 2 to 3 million acre feet per year, or a 30 to 48% reduction if we were to be following those efficiencies. Water reuse has tripled over the past 50 years, but we still only reuse 25% of wastewater generated. And so the reuse potential is another 1.8 million to 2.1 million acre feet per year. For urban stormwater capture, the potential there, they said, was 580,000 acre feet for a dry year and up to 3 million acre feet for a wet year. Water efficiency is the least expensive water supply option, followed by stormwater capture, and then brackish desalination, and then recycled water. Seawater desalination is the most expensive option. And I have provided staff with a link to that report, and we'll be sending that out after today's meeting. I will move on to, if I might, Judge, just a couple of housekeeping things. Welcome again back to CVAG's sort of offices. We will continue to use this facility for meetings like this, at least through the end of the fiscal year. We are tracking legislation that might allow more flexibility on how we conduct meetings in the future, to allow back to the virtual meetings, hopefully again. What we are doing, you see Mayor de Kunick of Blythe on the screen. We did notify the public that we have a Blythe location. So you might remember the old Brown Act rules. As long as you let staff know a good week or more in advance that you want to participate in one of these meetings virtually, we can accommodate you. You see these devices in front of you. I don't know if you've probably seen them in other offices before. They are called OWLs. So theoretically, Mayor de Kunick is seeing whoever is speaking. When they're speaking or waving their hand, you might even see a split screen of multiple people. So that's what they're doing. We're also recording the meeting that way. One other little bit of housekeeping. One item that we neglected to put on this agenda, but we will put it on the executive committee agenda, is we have a used oil and tire recycling program. We get some state money every year, and it comes before you. We have a resolution in 2017. The state told us we had to update that resolution. It didn't get into this agenda packet. Frankly, I don't think you would have cared. It's a pre-functory routine thing, but we are going to put it information and set an item on the executive committee. So
I feel like we
We've renewed something. Maybe it's just a contract amendment or
yeah,
the resolution.
We had contracts.
We have, so, yeah.
All right, Mr. Chair, that's it.
Thank you. Can we also consider, because I know we're going to be appointing somebody else to the SCAG meeting. I know for the IREN meetings, we're having a remote location consistently. Mm-hmm. And we also look at that for SCAG. And if we don't have facilities available, I can deal with my city and maybe we can provide them to our city. But
we can do that.
We'll have that as a backing option in case we get tied up and can't make it out early.
Yeah, so Erica?
Yeah. Yes, we can make that out. They would have to notice it, however, on their agenda.
Yes.
So
yes.
As long as we know in advance and we can coordinate with their work.
Good. Thank you.
And Chair, may I just have word? I'm assuming that your cities are much like our city. We had far higher attendance when it was audio and people could just tune in. And now we have practically bare chambers when we host our events and our meetings. And it is part of evolution, you know, I think, and especially government, dig your heels in and never want to change. You know, that's why we're here, right? So I really hope that we can all advocate and work towards a tweak to the Brown Act where we can offer both, where people can be in attendance or they can join virtually and we can have more robust and inclusive conversation.
Do you have people watching on Zoom that can do public comments on Zoom there?
No.
Oh,
we have a television solution. We did have Zoom. It caused a lot of problems.
Really?
And it held up the meeting and it wasn't fluent. And, you know, I can remember hosting at a hotel room one time because I wasn't going to be in town, you know,
yeah.
Hey, if you want to come to my hotel room for this meeting, come on in. And so, you know, I think we have evolved to a position where we can do better and I hope we can all support that.
Yeah, if you want to listen to one of our public council meetings next Wednesday, it goes pretty well with it, don't they?
I'd like to
check it out. Yeah. Thank you. Any other comments? I will go ahead and move on to the consent calendar. Any questions on the consent calendar or the motion to approve?
Looking to motion to approve.
Second.
We have a motion from Mayor Evans and a second from Mr. Russ Meyer. Can we get to do a roll call?
No, I'm just all in favor, but let's make a note for a blank.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any abstain or?
I'll abstain.
One abstention, Kamal Caliente.
And last year? That's
Mr.
Lau. Mayor de Kooning.
Mayor de Kooning from Life.
I wave my hand, that's yes. Yes.
You see a thumbs down, we'll know it's a no.
All right, motion passes. Move on to item number 6A, regional efforts to expand urban tree planting and increase shade. And we have Peter Carlson.
Thank you, Chair. Good afternoon, esteemed committee members. So at the February 9th E&E meeting, this committee voted to endorse a regional tree and shade initiative. And I'm going to provide a very brief update on what CBAG Act and CBAG has taken since then. This effort is to reduce temperatures, improve air quality, and benefit public health. On March 31st, CBAG applied for a $650,000 planning grant through the state's Office of Planning and Research. This money will be used to develop plans for planting shade trees in the most vulnerable census tracts. We expect notification on this application in June of 23. CBAG is also tracking implementation dollars to support this effort. And already active in this space is IIED, and I have Sabrina Barber, IIED's Manager of Energy Business and Regulatory Compliance, to give a brief presentation about their efforts.
Good afternoon, Chairman Ortiz and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to come before you today and share some information on the IIED's tree roll program. Here I am already making things difficult for you guys. Technology, it's great when it works, right? As a bit of background, in 2021, IIED's board of directors adopted a resolution that recognized Arbor Day, which, as you're likely aware, occurs the last Friday in April every year. This resolution urges communities, customers and agencies within the IID service territory to observe the day with tree planting activities. And IID commends CBAG on the efforts that you've put forth so far, particularly with the SUN project or SUN program and associated projects. Similarly, the resolution, IID's resolution, set out expectations for staff, including planting of 300 trees at IID's facilities, and also development of a tree shade tree program to promote many benefits of planting trees, which are identified on this slide here. Of course, we have significant interest in the energy conservation and demand reduction efforts, but also the other air quality benefits, the wildlife, all the community and societal benefits that are associated with tree planting as well. So here are a number of factors related to our Tree for All program. IID developed its Tree for All program that, under the current guidelines, provides residential customers with a free shade tree. A primary, but not only objective of the program is to help customers reduce energy costs by reducing up to 20% of their energy use. We provide the free shade tree, guidance on the most beneficial location for planting the trees, and also instructions for care. Trees provided through the program are carefully selected based on what makes the most sense for our region and to protect against mortality. A desired outcome is to make sure that we give the tree the best chance for surviving into a full, healthy tree. So under current guidelines, program residential customers may participate in the program once every 12 months. We utilized two different approaches for our Tree for All program. We utilized a drive-up event and also a tree planting event. And since we were piloting the program, trying to test out what worked best, in Coachella Valley, we opted for the drive-up event. So we had a pre-registration system. We contracted with the Arbor Day Foundation for their program. It was the Community Canopy Program. So essentially, customers could go online through their software tool, reserve their tree, select the tree that they most preferred. The software tool allowed opportunity to move your tree location around so that you could kind of assess where the best location would be and which area would garner the greatest energy savings. But we found that customers felt it was a little bit cumbersome and confusing. So that was some of the feedback that we had received during the actual events. So towards the end of the program year, after the last event that we did at Indian Water Authority, we used the same day registration format. So they could sign up online or they could just show up. And that also accommodated some other customers that maybe hadn't been aware or hadn't registered. To just increase customer satisfaction by those customers that did show up on site without a reservation. The drive-up events provide 5-gallon trees, and customers they're provided a watering bucket that is essentially a 5-gallon bucket. There's a hole in the side. That helps customers properly water. It is designed so that the water targets a specific area, it saturates slowly. That way customers, use the proper amount of water and also don't have to forget that they left their water hose on or their sprinklers and overwater or wastewater. Through the drive-up events, we planted 600 trees, or actually 600 trees were distributed. And then on top of that, we did another 50 through the same day registration, for a total of 650 trees. The advantages that we discovered through this program is, obviously it was a lower cost than our tree planting program, and it allowed for distribution of more trees. That way, with the lower cost, we were able to provide trees to obviously more customers. It's also quicker and easier to implement than the tree planting program, only because we had to have additional contracts in place. in order to handle the installation or the planting side. And I'm sure most of your organizations are probably very similar to IID, but our internal procurement process, just because of all the controls that we have in place, it can take quite a bit of time to get that through the process. So challenges that we received and some feedback that we received was, you know, comparisons on a smaller tree size, of course, depending on when the events took place. Some of the trees that are selected are deciduous, which means in the winter time the leaves fall off. So, you know, some of them towards the cooler period or the cooler months, you know, essentially look like a tree, right? Yeah, a tree stick. And so
there's a lot of tree envy.
Yeah, especially by the ones that are evergreen. They, you know, we had a number of customers that are like, I don't want that one, you know, I want that one to be changed. So the pre-registration order abandonments, that was another thing that we noticed through using the Arbor Day Foundation, and nothing against their software, but just customers have a tendency, surprisingly, especially for a free tree, to, even though they signed up, you know, they either forget, we made sure that we were communicating regularly and routinely to remind them of the event. But just for whatever reason, some people had changes in plans. Anyway, we ended up having a number of trees that were abandoned. So towards the end of the event, you were trying to, you know, figure out whether they're going to show up or not. That way you can distribute to customers that are there and interested, or alternatively, figure out what you're going to do with those trees once the event is over. So at one point, City of Coachella, fortunately, we were able to donate 20 of the remaining trees for their tree planting efforts. So that's one of the approaches that we took. Plus another challenge of the dry-up event. When you're talking about self-installation, you have to wonder, did they really get planted? You have to do a little bit of follow-up to verify whether or not the trees were planted and if they were planted properly. So there's a chance that there could be lower or higher mortality rate of those particular trees. Here are just some photos. That's always helpful in understanding. This is our staff and handing out the trees. There's the buckets that I mentioned. Those are the tree planting buckets. They look like regular buckets, but you can't use them for anything else because there are, you know, holes strategically placed in the bottom of the pail. So if you try to fill that with something, you know, it's liquid, it's going to come out. This is the spectrum approach that we use for the Imperial County area. And this was an actual tree planting. So we contracted with the Yakis Company to assist us in that, and we subcontracted with Advanced Services who performed the actual installation. We selected Legacus because she had worked quite extensively with a number of cities within Imperial County on their tree grant programs through CAL FIRE, and also our City of El Centro has an urban forest program. So given her history, we contracted with her, and that program we were able to install 15 gallon trees. So as you can see from the picture here, they're significantly different. Primarily, it's the size of the actual tree trunk. So they were great trees, but because of the size and the cost difference, we were only able to offer customers, 300 customers, trees under that program. So it was slightly higher in cost than the Arbor Day, well, the drive up events as compared to the tree planting. So, of course, advantages are the larger tree size. We know for certain that those are planted and planted where they should be planted. And of course, you do have higher, we have significant customer satisfaction. It was pretty impressive operation. They came out with their tree augers to plant and give the instructions. So when you see a well-established tree, you know, instantly popped up there, then, you know, within one day's time, a lot of positivity received from that. Challenges, of course, as I've kind of mentioned before, is the program cost. Because it is more expensive, we weren't able to distribute as many trees. And then we also just had difficulty on the scheduling and planting. So sometimes, even though we had identified the best location. Once they got out there, saw where the tree was going to be planted, or maybe they spoke to their spouse and wanted it moved. So there were just a number of those type installation related issues that came up that were somewhat challenging that weren't experienced through the dry up events. Here are more pictures of the different locations where we were able to install. As you can see, we have plenty of happy customers that were ready to take pictures with us. So for our program budget, we utilize what's called our public benefits charge. That's a 2.85% non-bypassable charge that is on all of our electrical customer accounts. Those are restricted funds. There's only four authorized categories on where you can spend those funds. It's either through efforts related to energy efficiency, low income support, new investments in renewable energy technology, and then also some research and demonstration. So we utilize those funds. And the 2022 allocation, our budget was $175, $175,000. And we ended up spending $125,000 for that. Our budget allocation for 2023 has been, it was approved to be considerably higher. We had approved $500,000. We have not reached that just because we've had some competing priorities and haven't been able to roll out as many activities as we had hoped. But we're looking at some expansion opportunities that will, closer towards the end of the year, really ramp up those expenditures. So in 2023, we do have additional Tree for All activities that we're going to continue our dry up events and our tree planting. We've already held another event at the City of Indio at the Indio Water Authority facility. We're planning one for the City of Winter Haven, and we're also going to have it'll include a Tree for All drive up event, but we're trying to coordinate maybe a larger resource type event. If not, it will strictly be the drive up tree, but we really want to focus pretty heavily on the Salton Sea communities just because it's difficult for a number of those customers to drive into any of the other locations. Whenever we have a City of India or Coachella or La Quinta event, we do allow any of our customers to participate at a location of their choice. So just because it's held in one of the cities doesn't mean it's restricted to just those city members. So it's open to all IAD residential customers. But for Salton Sea folks, that is, you know, a pretty significant drive and commitment to get in. Other activities that we were planning on and actively working towards is grant research and application. We had talked with CBAG staff, you know, earlier in hopes of, you know, future collaboration and welcoming opportunities to work with you. And we are also considering potential expansion for of the Tree for All program. Right now, it is solely for residential customers. We have had the opportunity to assist some of the nonprofits in tree planting activities through our Green Grants program. So we've kind of combined the two programs. That's for nonprofit agencies. So we've just kind of utilized that as a program to facilitate for the non-residential, but we're hoping to expand that so that we can allow funds for public green space and nonprofit municipalities to find ways to collaborate. And ultimately our desire is to get as many trees out there as we can. So with that, happy to answer any questions you may have. Our program lead, if you have any, you know, subsequent questions or want detailed information, will be Darren Marcus. So I've provided his contact information there. Of course, you have mine as well. Any questions?
I have a question, Chair.
Sure.
So in the picture that you showed of the trees being planted in different yards, they were always quite a distance from the home. How does that produce energy savings?
Yeah, it depends on the location and then the ultimate height of the tree. So depending on how, even though some of them are further away, you do have to make sure that the canopy and the roots, it depends on like driveways, where driveways are, where sidewalks may be. It's kind of all of those factors play into it. So that's how we determine where they should be. And then, of course, you want to try to just depending on what direction, whether they're south facing, those are the kind of guiding principles.
So am I looking at this short-sighted? I assumed to reap energy efficiency, it would need to be shading your home or shading windows of your home, you know, so that you'd be reducing energy. But when they're 50, 75 feet away, are they ever going to grow big enough to actually shade your house?
They will, but it,
dark tree.
It will, but it'll take a while.
As a general principle, looking to be not too close to your house, you don't want to have damage with your foundation or tear up your driveway. So you want to be on the west side of your home or to the south side so that you're getting the maximum savings in the hottest hours of the day. The sun is kind of in the western horizon there. So that's the best sort of practices. So you get that maximum shade on your house.
And you don't want to bring your solar panels.
Well, that, yeah, that's true. I guess I'm kind of trying to work that through in my brain.
Yeah.
How does that be fun? I can tell you where to plant your tree.
I don't think there were 75 feet away. I may have been in
the neighbor's house. Yeah, the pictures might have been a little deceiving on where the locations are, but we also look for if there are HVAC units that we could provide shade for, that's also helpful, or if a residence has a garage space that is conditioned, then that's that could be a factor as well. So
thank you.
But good observation. Thank you.
So then do you have events planned for the end of this month, or there are still schedules to be had? And
we do have schedules, so I can distribute that so that you have that information handy. Now that it's getting towards the warmer section, we're going to go ahead and hold the remaining events once we get back into the fall planting season. So that's where the schedule kind of falls right now. We are, at least for now, the springtime done with.
Any other questions?
Just an overall comment. Encourage as much tree planting as possible, both in the IID service area and Edison. This has been a tremendously positive program. Sabrina worked to build this program from scratch. We didn't have a tree program at IID before, and these programs at multiple events and iterations of it sold out within hours. Sold out, you can say that, for free trees, but they were incredibly successful. And customers were very happy every single time we did this. And so yeah. I know Mr. Martinez in the back, he is a happy customer, although someone did take his bucket.
Well, and I do have to say, you know, leadership makes a huge difference. Director Gamby has been championing this effort. So, you know, continue to support all your municipalities and organizations that, you know, are willing to invest in this space, because it can take a lot of effort, but you know, in the long run, there's plenty of benefits. So
I have a question. I know here we're pushing a lot for native trees that are native to the area.
Right.
I noticed a lot of them aren't, but I know they're still drought tolerant and quite a lot of shade. Is there a reason for that? Do they provide much more shade or any bigger reason?
No, that was actually one of the, in fact, I should have listed it on the challenges. We used Arbor Day Foundation, and we had a little bit different opinions on which trees were native. And they provided us with supporting documentation as to why those trees were selected, and it's also based on supply. So we kind of, at the end of the day, agreed to disagree, and we kind of swapped to UC Berkeley, and I believe it's UC Riverside, have different shade tree selector tools that were more on what our thinking was as to what constitutes native. So.
Okay. Is there any certain species that you'll be pushing for?
No, right now, it's kind of still the Chinese pistache, jacarandas,
Southern magnolia.
So, well, we did have Southern magnolia. We actually weren't sure how that was going to plant. So we're interested in observing those over time, because they were hugely popular. That was one of their customers. Yeah. One of their top choices. And they are beautiful leaf trees. And we're interested to see for certain how those grow in the area.
All right. Well, thank you. And we're really glad to see that program. I know we have a lot of happy residents about that, and happy to see it growing as well. Thank you.
Yes, we're going to continue to invest in that. So thanks, everyone. Okay. Any additional questions? Appreciate your time.
Thank you, Sabrina.
All right, we'll move on to item 6B, Imperial Irrigation District Governance and Electricity Services Study. I did want to also mention that our director, Andy, has joined us, so thank you for joining us. Appreciate it. Go ahead, Andy.
Good afternoon, Honorable Chair, members of the committee. I just want to say I'm a happy customer in Southern Magnolia. It is sprouting new leaves, and I have to report on that. I suspect my neighbor's paint workers took my bucket. Literally, I really had a hole.
I'm sure they figured it out.
So I'm going to provide you a brief update on the Imperial Irrigation District Governance study that was recently put out by NAPCO about a week and a half ago. I do want to preface the presentation by letting you know that indeed did reach out to the executive directors of both Imperial and Riverside County NAPCOs. Unfortunately, they do not have availability at this time, but they did want me to convey to you that they are working on materials to provide outreach and presentations to CMAG in the future, and very good to be more engagement and outreach as we move along. So I will do the best I can to convey the highlights of this study that was conducted by Dupuja and Laws on behalf of the so with that, here we go. I just want to provide you a quick overview of the area, geographic area that we're talking about in the blue lines. The blue line encompasses the Ocotillo Agua Water District service boundary, and the red line is the energy service boundary. So those overlapping boundaries are our geographic area that we are focused on and are trying to address in terms of providing representation on electrical service matters. And to the right, I did put some pictures in to depict the agreement that allows the current service structure to operate, and that is between CWD and the Imperial Irrigation District. There is the agreement of compromise that allows this to happen. There is, it does exist, and we do have a copy. It's included in the NAPCO study if you're interested in the way you sleep at night. One provision in there that is really critical to discussion is a 99-year lease provision between the both agencies that allows. Allows ID to provide electrical services in the area. In exchange, they provide 8% of the proceeds for CBWD. But overall, the agreement on this provision is in this agreement. The overarching framework of the agreement is to address water right disputes between the agencies. And so the big question as it relates to the specific provision is what happens after the year 2033 when this lease provision expires. And so there have been a number of legislative attempts to address this issue. I'm going to go back to what late Supervisor John Benoit did, and folks before them did, but most recent actions that were the impetus to really move this discussion forward. And that was SB 1021 by Assembly Member Retired Assemblyman Chad Mays. That bill proposed a study, but it got vetoed by the governor. But his tremendous efforts in coordination with stakeholders did successfully allow for SB 170, which was a budget act, to include $500,000 for both NAPCOs to conduct this study. And really, the study again is to bring the Coachella Valley to the table on electric matters and really elevate representation. Direct representation on service area. So, to give you a very high level around the study and what it touches on, really the study really touches on critical juncture and really two frameworks which we can move forward on. On one end is a future of it, IID and cooperating with IID, and the other one is without IID. And when the few of the foundational objectives that are basis for determining what some of the best governance structures could be is ease of implementation of a proposed governance structure, vertically integrated utility to really optimize the benefits of local control in terms of generation distribution of generation, transmission, and distribution of energy, and ability to adapt to future changes. Those are three foundation objectives that I thought were very important in the study, among others that I'll touch on later. So again, there's two frameworks, one with the IAD future, we can continue with the status quo, continue to advise IAD energy matters as we currently have been doing with the ECAC and the Energy Commission, where we cannot change the power rates, eliminates startup risks. However, there's minimal operational impacts, but it doesn't really address the representation. The other option is annexation. But with annexation, we would have to do a special election, jurisdictional boundary, and it limits risk and financial obligation with IAD still providing an oversight and operational role. Or we can also study this at creating a subboard. For Coachella Valley stakeholders, again, this would create a jurisdictional boundary for the area. It could align with the Coachella Valley community needs and minimize financial risks. Or we can enter into a structure which CPAC operates, and that's a joint powers agreement, which provides optimal flexibility. It does not change the IAD jurisdictional boundary, but the DMV can administer its own programs. Legislature would be required for this. And you can grow bonds to assist with capital improvement projects. So just a highlight there. The other option, the other road we can take is a future without IAD. And some of the options that the study touches on is creating an investor-owned utility, such as Edison, for the area. We know that option, there are significant startup costs and acquire assets. But also limited ability for local control given the role the Public Utilities Commission plays in rate making and other functions of the utility. We could also create a special district or a public utility district. This would require special elections, could provide direct representation, and can finance capital improvement projects. The third option is a regularly integrated utility, which provides a great level of control. They can also provide a lot of debt risk for starting up a very integrated utility and really challenge affordable rates, which is something that IAD customers highly value. And lastly, we can do what DC is doing, and that's create a community choice aggregation. Again, that would require a merger with an IOU in order to be able to startup CCUA. However, again, limited control oversight given the role of CPUC, although minimizes financial risk and defers ownership of assets.
Mr. Martinez, really quick on annexation. What do you mean by annexation?
With annexation, the IAD could potentially annex or bring it into their jurisdictional boundaries, the Coachella Valley territory.
Because it's only under a service agreement right now, correct. Compromise agreement. Mm-hmm. There's not a LAFCO designated energy area per se for the Riverside County service area. Is there a different way of saying that?
The IAD looks different ways in different contexts. So you have the jurisdictional boundaries, which are different than the water service area boundaries, which are different than the energy service area boundaries. All three are different. So the water service area boundaries and from the All-American Canal Service Area, the Boulder Canyon Project Act, the Hoover Dam, that was set there with the Secretary of the Interior. So the jurisdictional boundaries are pretty well tied to that. So the water jurisdiction, which is the basis of IAD, was built upon that. So there had been some years ago, some LAFCO review process of which annexation was suggested. There's a lot of legal challenges to that involve the water side of things, but that was put forward as a consideration, but there's a lot of considerations from that are complicated, to say the least.
Thank you.
Yeah, I just want to add another thing that was also highlighted in the study is the incompatibility of offices. I just want to bring that up to you as an active member for some of these governance structures that require special elections. Some of these, such as the PUD, made is a conflict with the likely being able to serve on to the board. So that's some of the things to think about. as well as from the study, because the annexation would require a special election. So just to provide you a recap of finalizing my presentation and review what the next steps are here. The study does recommend continued discussions and the Talibani Energy Commission. They do recognize that this body has made significant progress over the years in really understanding the business structure of IID as well as the issues in the Eastern Talibani sphere by IID and really trying to identify mutual interests, values, and foundational objectives that are reported to leading this discussion forward. It recommends defining rights, roles, and responsibilities. There are some objectives here that I've highlighted, such as ease of implementation, adaptation, local control representation, economic development, financial oversight, minimizing risk to the great higher zones, just amongst some of the few metrics that we use to evaluate what governance structure would be a preferred alternative. But we know that this does not, although it does not make a recommendation for alternative, there is a matrix in the study called the Alternative Governance Evaluation Matrix that essentially lists all the objectives and checks off the box for each governance measure that has been presented to you. And for a future with IID, the JPA does check off most of the boxes. It is one that is elevated in terms of recommendation. And one in the future without IED, a public utility district is what's recommended. That checks off most of the boxes on some of these values and objectives that I mentioned. Developing these policy principles is also going to be important to continue discussion on what policy framework is going to look like. Doing an analysis and really determining what the financing mechanisms, how revenue is going to be generated, and what the CIP looks like, and where assets are going to be located to continue. Service and reliability for customers at affordable rates, and continued public engagement is also going to be a key piece. LAPCO did put out the study about a week and a half ago, but they are leaving ample time for feedback, discussion, and community engagement. So they have about 5 months. They're giving us about 5 months to provide them feedback on the study before they finalize it and is finalized and sits on the show. Reaction. With that, I just wanted to give you that quick update and hand it over to Mayor Evans for any thing that I might have missed, or Director Hamby to initiate a discussion. Given the study, I think one of the things the study does accomplish is really coalesces all the stakeholders and parties around the independent study that was long overdue and provides some recommendations that have been discussed. But now it's on paper and can be used to move on and really start to hone in on a preferred alternative. With that, I'll take any questions or hand it over to Mayor Evans.
Thank you, Emmanuel. Very good summary and recap. And as you mentioned, there's multiple pages there. If you feel the need to learn more about what a challenge we have ahead of us for the IID customers in the Riverside County area. I would say that I was definitely opposed to even having IID start the CVAC, the Energy Commission, when it was, because I felt that it was just another courtesy commission to placate us because we had no say in ECAC, and that was proven for decades before that. What it has enlightened me, it's one of those things where you either jump in and get engaged with the solutions instead of complaining about what's not working. And what we've learned is there are a lot of opportunities and a lot of challenges. And as the study shows, it didn't solve anything for us. It very much memorialized from a third party entity many of the things that we have explored and discussed and ruled out, considered. And again, we're still a long way from looking at what's right for each of our jurisdictions, or can we come to agreement collectively. I think the governance component is still one big piece that is our next step in one of our subcommittees. Looking at still what are those options, regardless of what steps we take or encourage. From this committee standpoint, I don't know if, Chairman Ortiz and I were talking before we started about there really isn't a financial analysis to go with what will it cost for this option, this option, this option. And we haven't ventured into that yet. And that wasn't the charge for LAPCO, quite honestly. despite the $500,000 cost of that document, so that we know that that's something that this committee could probably say that as a response, we'd like to see those options while we're making decisions or supporting or endorsing or helping move that line.
So is that a request that you think that we should make to LAFCO?
Well, and I don't know if LAFCO would do that versus commenting on the study and indicating that that's what it's lacking, or perhaps that's what we can charge back to the Energy Commission. And I can definitely bring that back as an Energy Commission vice chair to say that that's perhaps our next steps as we're looking at honing in on some options that group has thought might be the best approach. And by far not decided, because every area wants something different,
yeah,
but still looking at the cost for sure.
So if we brought that up to the Energy Commission, who would be doing the analysis?
Well, like maybe kind of putting things in order here. So just echoing all of Mayor Evans's comments there, and this was quite an initiative to undertake back in August of 2021 when we first started this thing. Relationships had not been developed or had gone sour over many years' time. And I think what's happened over the last few years, and particularly with the new IID board that's been installed over the past couple of years' time, is there is a great effort toward partnership and establishing an effective set of solutions for the future that's going to be sustainable, yet something that we can adjust and adapt to over the future. So I think where we've come to with the study was really good, actually. I had a good time reading it, like at 6 in the morning when it first came out, and then read it in one go. And they did a pretty good job doing a solid analysis of the issues. They had engaged a lot of different stakeholders in the Mitchell Valley, also in Carroll County, as well, who were affected, and they memorialized, like Mayor Evans stated, a lot of the issues that we had talked about, really starting at the outset of the commissions. We understood there were going to be air group issues that we needed to address and work on, and then there were the longer term, sort of post 2023 or 2033, or long term sort of governance issues. And so, when we before the study came out, we submitted a letter that the commission approved, basically identifying two alternatives that we were really looking at. One is, as Mr. Martinez noted, there was a JPA structure, and looking at a CCA sort of equivalent. IID being a publicly owned utility, you don't have CCAs because it's public, and we have a really completely unique, very odd situation that's developed over 80 some years at this point. And using some examples from that in a JPA type structure. And then I would also say that we're working very effectively with the city of La Quinta in India with developing a JPA structure for the nearer term financing issues for growth and economic development. I think we're going to get a lot of good operational experience from that. That's starting to near its final phases of completion pretty soon here. And then the other option is the municipal utility district option. We evaluated some pros and cons to that. But at least what we were looking at as a more preferred alternative at this point was the JPA structure. But getting back to your original question, Chair, is that there's a lot of work that we need to do. We've narrowed down the individual options to things we think are more interesting or worth exploring. The next step is to develop the sort of the governance menu buffet, if you will. What items are wanting to be governed? To what extent, to what degree, and what extent. So that's going to take us some more time to do. And then once we get a clearer picture of what those priority items are, I think each city or tribe or county area has a slightly different view of what their priorities are. Mm-hmm. Then we'll start to hone in on that approach, and then we'll start to get into the more finer details on the financing, those sorts of things. But I think overall, this is a key overriding priority. I don't think that, especially with the JPA approach, there's going to be any real financial impact. There will be dollars to set stuff up. But this is, I think, really the right way to go. Certainly, I think it's provided some really good service over the last 80-some years here in the Mitchell Valley. But as we're entering the next chapter here in the long term, we want to have something that's locally governed in nature while taking the best elements of local governance here while taking advantage of the servicing system that's been built in the IID service area over the last, since 1996 or something.
But it would be IID probably providing that assistance or hiring a consultant to help.
Well, that's another discussion we want to have. Our next phase here is now that we've narrowed down some of our options that we've been investigating. Now, and my goal is now that we've got this stable foundation forming the commission and having these conversations, the next step is taking sort of a hands-off view from an IAB standpoint now that we've got this thing going and really starting to have some neutral facilitation to get us to the next stage and start to really dive into the details.
And how do you see that neutral input coming in?
So at our governance committee meeting, we're going to be looking at one consultant coming up here soon, just for consideration. There are others that we could look at, but what we're trying to at least provide for input to the commission is some, and this is a very sort of unique set of situation. I think the LACPO people did a very good job. That's a very, there's no other similar situation anywhere. So they did a good job putting this together. But we're looking at one firm in particular that has experience dealing with SMUD and CPUC and some other publicly owned utilities throughout the country. So hopefully that the commission is willing and the various member agencies of the Coachella Valley Energy Commission. I think it's a good idea. We can approach what that might look like, and there's costs that would come associated with it. I personally think it would be good if everyone had some level of skin in the game so that there was some sense of ownership and it wasn't IID paying for it. This is a joint enterprise that we can all build a sense of trust in, which is very important.
And normally our CBEC meeting is this afternoon and always pretty much the same day, but and this is why when Emmanuel said they weren't available today, we moved our CBEC meeting to next Thursday so that they can be available and help present the report and have that discussion with the full energy commission. It's 4 to 6, 4 to 5:30-ish. At IID in person, Monroe and 58.
Any other comments or questions, board members? Well, thank you. Move on to item number 60, appointment of regional representative to the GAC policy committee. We have Peter.
Happy New Year, members. So as part of CBAG's membership of Southern California Association of Governments, we are afforded a sub-regional representative on each of their policy committees, which is an energy and environment committee. In 2021, CBAG's executive committee appointed Mayor Oscar Ortiz to serve on this committee on behalf of CBAG. And they also recommended that we reassess and revisit these appointments every 2 years. So in the interim, Mayor Oscar Ortiz has been elevated to a regional council representative for SCAB, which and has elected to maintain his position on the Energy and Environment Committee. Nonetheless, this leaves a vacant seat for CBAG representation on that committee. I don't believe we received any nominations yet for interested parties, so staff is recommending that this committee discuss and nominate representative to SCAG's Energy and Environment Committee that may be voted on by CBAG's executive committee at our next meeting.
Thank you. And just for information of the board members, we do meet every first Thursday of the month out in Los Angeles. So those are in pretty in Los Angeles, but we do expect that commitment from anybody who wishes to be nominated. I have had some experience of attending several conferences with Ms. Stephanie Vichen from Coachella, so I would like to make that nomination, but I'd also like to open it up for any other nominations from our board members.
I would second Stephanie. I've been planning to go to Los Angeles.
Council meetings are first and third, so Stephanie's our girl.
First and third,
Supervisor would support you doing that?
Yes, okay.
And you're willing to make the trip out?
Yeah, I'm ready for the drive.
I'll have to do this night and scan the request night and for the drive and watching as required.
Thank you. And do we need to take a vote on this?
Yes, please. Recommend this nominating this routine, and we'll have the executive committee appoint her at our next meeting.
All right. We have a motion by myself and a second by Mayor Evans. And all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? And Blythe?
Yes.
Thank you for your commitment to join us out there. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
And we'll move on to item 60, update on in the regional energy network actions and program rollout.
Peter Paulson. Thank you, Chair, committee members.
To provide a brief update on actions that have taken place with the Inland Regional Energy Network, IREN for short. Quick refresher, IREN is a collaboration between CVAG, Western Riverside Council of Governments, and San Bernardino Council of Governments. This collaboration was formed to administer CPUC dollars to achieve state energy efficiency goals. And right now we are in the process of developing those programs and implementing them. And from this committee, we have Chair Ortiz representing. So we are in the process of rolling out an energy fellowship program through IREN. It's a partnership with Civic Spark. For the entire IREN area, which is Riverside and San Bernardino counties, there will be 27 fellows. It will be approximately 1,700 hours for 11 months with a host agency, and it's broken into two categories. We have 1,300 to 1,400 hours on energy efficiency and IREN initiatives, and then 300 to 400 hours for growth and learning opportunities. A few points I'd like to make. There's no cost to host agencies for hosting a fellow. Our cities would have the opportunity to train the next generation of the energy workforce, and it would give our local cities an opportunity to advance local energy efficiency initiatives. These are a few potential projects. They are by no means an exhaustive list. There is flexibility in assigning projects. The only requirement is that these projects pertain to energy efficiency. To become a host agency, there are only three requirements. The fellow needs access to a workspace, a computer, and supervision from a city staff. And for timeline and next steps, at the last IREN Executive Committee meeting, the committee members approved the contract with Civic Spark. In April this month, we will be reaching out to cities to inform them of this opportunity. Interviews will begin likely in May, and September the fellowship will begin. And there's one other thing, a quick thing I wanted to mention is that CVAG has had the benefit of having a Civic Spark fellow in the past. We had one in 2021, and they helped develop the urban greening guide. So, awesome. Can I have you take any questions?
Thank you. And just a reminder, the Inland Regional Energy Network was our way of bringing in those state dollars locally, because a lot of that was moving to bigger cities and we weren't getting much funding out here. So that brought us this ability to bring that money locally and provide some staff help for these energy efficiency programs. Any questions from our board?
Questions?
No. Okay. All right. Well, thank you. I'm going to move on to item number 7, information. And we'll move on to item number 8, public comments on agenda items. Do we have any comments here?
I don't see any.
All right. So one thing I did want to see, and Director Hand, you might have something on with this. When would be a good time to report on the negotiation going on for the Colorado River?
I can provide some brief comments right now. If you'd like something more in depth, I can certainly provide that at a future meeting. So background of the IID board, of course, but also as an IID board member, is elected by the IID board to the Colorado River Board of California. And from there, that also has other Colorado River interests that collectively represent the state on Colorado River issues. From there, in January, I was elected the chair, which ex officio under the Water Code makes me the Colorado River Commissioner for California and represents the state on interstate issues. So where we're at right now is that last summer, the Bureau of Reclamation asked for 2.4 million acre feet of reductions on the Colorado River. That was a huge number. And this was responsive to chronic overuse of Colorado River water in the lower basin, states being Arizona, California, and Nevada. We also have Mexico, but that's kind of a separate sort of issue. And so looking for 2 to 4 million acre feet to address the chronic overuse, plus the drought issues as well. The basin states then did try to come to some sort of consensus over a short 60-day period. unsurprisingly, no solution was made in that 60 days. By August 15th, by the time Reclamation moved forward with their 24 months setting the operations for the next year on the major dams of Redwood Forest. So Reclamation then started an SEIS process to open up the current guidelines that operate the Colorado River. They began that in December. And then in January, the states were encouraged to come together to see if a consensus approach, framework consensus was possible between the seven basin states, which is historically the way the states collectively do things when they've not been in litigation, which is what we're trying to not do. And so unfortunately, at the end of that process, the four upper basin states, Colorado, Utah, New Mexico, Wyoming, had kind of taken their approach, which was, we're not going to do anything, it's all lower basin problem. Then you had Arizona and Nevada come together, which was, let's host California. And then the four and two came together while we're at this fateful weird hotel in Denver, Colorado in January. And then we're basically ambushed and said, like, sign on a courthouse. And we said so we went through all kinds of contortions to try to come up with a collaborative arrangement, come to some level of compromise. At one point, we tried out like 7-8 different iterations in a row, and each and every single one of those was rejected by Arizona. And so, unfortunately, we had full plug at a certain point. We had a good conversation, though, at the end about continuing the efforts to try to work together. Then six basin states submitted their modeling proposal, which really disproportionately impacted California, lower basin tribes in Mexico, and then California. Then the following day, we submitted our alternative for modeling purposes. And then
you said everything came so close.
We didn't come that close. They were not
that. You said Arizona was the only one that couldn't come to any chance.
Well, they rejected every single thing we tried.
Every.
Yeah. So, anyway, what happened at that point is then we, as the lower basin states, tried to come together. There's been historic, the upper basin states worked real well together for different historical reasons. The lower basin states have been at odds. The longest case in the history of the U.S. Supreme Court was Arizona versus California, which lasted over 10 years, and there were three other attempts Arizona tried to get in front of the court as well. So there are some long-term misunderstandings between the states. But fortunately, we are working actively together to try and come to some level of consensus. Reclamation on Tuesday released their supplemental environmental impact statement, which is looking at alternatives to open the 2007 interim guidelines that operate the river and make some near-term changes. Those expire in 2026. So similar to our 2033 discussion, big discussions, and they need to start. And we're doing a lot better in our area than the basin states are. So they released that. One alternative looks at the basically a law of the river alternative, which is everything that's kind of guided the river, the compacts, contracts, the historical understandings, agreements, Supreme Court decrees. So that very much favors California in our vested interest historically in the river. The other option, called alternative two, would basically be an across-the-board cut to all lower basin states, which California doesn't necessarily agree with, but much less extreme than what the other six basin states, which were doing, which was another sort of arrangement that would really hit California very hard and upset all kinds of lasting sort of peace agreements that have been established in California in the last 20 years. So a meeting, dragging up from here, going to Burbank, meeting with counterparts in Arizona and Nevada tomorrow. We're going to have a small sort of confab, see if we can move the ball forward. And so things are looking a lot better than they were in January, but certainly we have a short timeline, 45 days to comment on what Reclamation's put forward, which are really bookends to extreme ends of the spectrum, and they really like to encourage the states to figure it out because they don't want to have to implement it themselves. Hope that answers some questions. So happy to come back.
Just one more, you said alternative two is even cuts across all states. What was the first one?
The first one is it's based on priority system. So basically, the way Colorado River works is first in time, first in right, the law of the river, generally the doctrine of prior appropriation. So if you are a tribe that's tied to the date that your reservation was created, if you're something else, either an irrigation district or a city, that's tied to the date that you took water out of the stream and then used it, so that's when you perfect it, your right is what it's called. And then so basically, and this is how it works in the Upper Basin. In particular, if you're short on water, then they go through the list and they start cutting from the bottom and moving to the top. So the later you come onto the use, the idea is that it's already pretty allocated. You can take the water if it's there, but you should know that that's that might not be there. So now the issue with that is that the junior most user on the river in the Lower Basin is the Central Arizona Project, which was heavily bought by California in the 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s, which basically built a canal uphill 400 miles from Lake Havasu up to Phoenix and then Tucson, and then took a lot of that water and just dumped it in the ground. So California didn't have it. Now they don't have pumps to pull it out of the ground. And so there are, at that time, of supplemental irrigation water. Now it's lots of houses that have been built on very junior water rights that per a congressional act state that that is the water to be cut off first if there's a shortage. But it's certainly uncomfortable. And these are the sort of conversations we're going to have.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Thank you for your work.
No problem.
All we want to do is turn our lights on.
And they say California who?
So. Well, thank you. We'll move on to item number 9. Just announcements. Next meeting is going to be for the Energy Environment Committee on May 11th. And the next meeting for Executive Committee would be on Monday, April 24th. And we'll go ahead and adjourn. Thank you.
Bye, gentlemen.